comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous planet. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. We're here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Now, because you have a right to know and because you matter, we try to get as much information to you in as many formats as we can. And one way we do that is with our free weekly newsletter. It's called the K-Files. If you're not subscribed, scoot over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Click where it says K-Files and subscribe. Like I said, it's free. There's absolutely no genius in sitting in the dark. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, but I bet you don't. I bet you stay with us like a lot of folks have all the way since 2000 when we first started publishing that. Let me also bring to your attention that on the website tonight is a gigantic link that says Alternative Universe Eye Conference. Now, you want to be sure that you click that and get your ticket to this conference. You know, we set out to do 6 of these. This is now number 4. And if you've missed the first 3, well, you have missed several universes. That's true. Do you want to miss them all? It's $10. Come on, $10. That's it for a conference. You can't beat that anywhere, and in fact, you can't even match it anywhere. We've got 5 fabulous speakers who will be presenting at this conference, and it comes to you. You don't have to buy a plane ticket. You don't have to put gas in your car. All you have to do is just turn your computer on and go to the link that we provide and use the access code that we provide you, and the conference comes to you. It comes right into your living room, your office, wherever it happens to be that you're watching via your computer. And it's live. This is not pre-recorded. It's live. So these presenters present their information, and then and you get to see their slides and whatever they're going to use, and then you get to ask them questions and have them respond to your questions, just like if you were in a big conference hall somewhere. But guess what? You're not paying for a conference hall. That's why it's $10. $10 to get a great conference. We've got the speakers already lined up. You know what we don't have? You. So click that link and get your ticket today and be a part of what a lot of the speakers have called a real paradigm buster. And I think it is. It really is. It is the way to go these days. Also, I'd like to remind you that we have a members community. Our members are the people who pay the bills. Now, you might say, well, I certainly don't want to do that. Okay, then you don't want to hear this show then next week, I guess. It works like that. We're 100% member-supported, listener-supported, and those who support us by joining or by donating are paying the bills so you can listen tonight. Aren't you grateful for them? How about let's put you in that group? Only you can do it. Click where it says join. It's $7.50 a month. You probably will never miss it. And I guarantee you're going to get way more than that in value. We'll be back right after this. Always helps if you push the right buttons. You know what I mean? But hey, I'm an old guy. I get away with that kind of stuff. All right. Tonight, my guest is Courtney Brown. Now, you might be asking yourself, those of you who are regular listeners to this show, you're here every night or virtually every night, you might be saying, well, now, you know, Courtney Brown was the guest on Friday night. Why is he back so soon? Well, let me refresh your memory. And there's a reason for that. I know it doesn't bother you, but you may be wondering about it. The reason is that Courtney Brown was not only my guest Friday night, he was my guest the previous Friday night. And in that appearance here on the show, it was his first appearance with us here at the Kevin Smith Show, and we covered lots of ground. I didn't have the opportunity to open up the telephone lines because we had so much ground to cover. And you may remember that in that show, Dr. Brown told us about his team of remote viewers. They are called the Farsight Institute. He told us about his team having remote viewed a base that is operational on Mars. And he told us a little bit about what they saw, but we had to kind of hurry through that because we were running out of time. And we just kind of had to hit it and then promise that he would be back and that you would have an opportunity to talk with him. Well, then Friday night, my selection for the topic was a different experiment that Farsight Institute had conducted. And so tonight, we want to keep that promise to you, the promise being that you would have a chance to hear more in depth about this operational base on Mars. And I have asked Dr. Brown to include some of his own remote viewing of the moon and what is there. The Farsight Institute viewed Mars. Dr. Brown on his own has viewed the moon. So we're going to be talking about what's going on the moon and on Mars, and we're going to give you the opportunity that you didn't have Friday a week ago when we first talked about this operational base on Mars. We're going to give you the opportunity to join the conversation, to call in with your questions, with your comments, and talk with Dr. Brown about that. He has been sitting patiently by, and certainly I appreciate him for being here with us again tonight. Dr. Brown, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're delighted to have you back.
Kevin, it's my great pleasure to be here today.
You explained to us Friday a week ago when you were first on the show, you explained to us how this experiment of remote viewing Mars was set up so that it would be scientific. And folks, if you didn't get that, if you weren't here, it's on YouTube. I put the whole show on YouTube minus the breaks, okay? And so what happens when it comes time to go to a break, you'll hear me say we got to go to a break, and the next thing you see is we're coming right back from the break and right back into our conversation with Dr. Brown. Okay, so let me ask you, if you can, because we've already pretty much we've covered how you set that experiment up, but if you can, in a thumbnail sketch, just kind of recap how you set that experiment up, and then I want to leave that and go to the moon and ask you a few questions about your own viewing of the moon, and we'll come back to Mars.
Okay. Kevin, there's something that is really interesting here. But before I go into it, let me just say that the YouTube presentation that you put up, I've also linked it to the bottom of our homepage.
Oh, good.
For the Farsight Institute. So that's www.farsight.org. And that first appearance on your show was very useful because it does really set the background for all the other talks that we'll be doing. And it is good to remember that all these other talks are covering different topics, and I'll mention why we have so much to talk about. But all of these other shows are in your members' area for
yes.
people to see at other times. So that's another. I really like the fact that you do maintain this members' area, that people can go back and look at the archives and see these shows over again, and a lot of information happens. So, Kevin, the issue of extraterrestrials is interesting. Mind you, at the Farsight Institute, we do remote viewing. We don't do studies into extraterrestrial life. We do studies into remote viewing. However, when we do our studies into remote viewing, we see things. And depending on where we are, what we're looking at, we see things that sometimes people can interpret as extraterrestrial. Now, I have my own personal interest in extraterrestrial life, and I published two best-selling books on the subject of using remote viewing as an application to study extraterrestrial life. And those two books are Cosmic Voyage, which is the first book of its kind, and that was actually the very first book that broke remote viewing out into the mass consciousness so people could actually see it. And for those of you who are members that watching in video, I'll put up what the cover of it looks like. And the second book was Cosmic Explorers, which was the sequel to that. Now, Cosmic Voyage and Cosmic Explorers are out of print. However, free downloads of them as PDFs, again, they were originally bestsellers, are available from my website, CourtneyBrown.com, just my name, CourtneyBrown.com. And if you go to that website and look at my publications under Speculative Nonfiction, you can see those publications, and again, they're available free. They're also available at Scribd, scribd.com, which is a very popular website for getting publications that you can read on your iPad or various computers or whatever. So those two publications, Cosmic Voyage and Cosmic Explorers, do sort of cover a great deal of information. But you asked me specifically about our Mars thing. Now, let me mention that I am, without doubt, the leading, I can say without doubt, because I'm the only academic on the planet that studies remote viewing as it is performed using the military or military-derived procedures. So, and those procedures of remote viewing were used originally for espionage purposes, but now we use them for exploring, but we also use them for scientific investigations into the nature of time and physical reality and things like that. So remote viewing is a mental procedure, and it is used to transfer information across time and space. That's any distance in space and past, present, and future. Now, for those of you who are saying, oh yeah, gosh, all right, this is crazy, I just encourage you to go back and look at the first presentation I gave, which is again on up on YouTube. Kevin was so gracious to put it up on YouTube, so you can get the background where I talked about the physics of remote viewing and how it is actually possible, and how that we do know now that what you're taught in physics courses will be thrown out and is obsolete in another 20 years. So it takes a generation to replace the current garbage that you get in any academic setting with the new stuff, and the next generation, that stuff is replaced. There's this constant ongoing turmoil within academia where whatever you're being taught, it was really the stuff that was discovered 30 years ago, and when those people retire and just leave, then the stuff that's newly discovered by graduate students when they get to be about 40 or 45, 50 years old finally becomes the dominant stuff. So you're always getting stuff in the scientific realm that's about 30 years late. So remote viewing is one of those things. Now, about Mars, to approach Mars, let me give you a brief overview, and then I'll go directly to your question, Kevin. The brief overview is that there's three things you have to look at when you're looking at extraterrestrial life. Most people say, was there a ship? Is there a UFO? But that's not even close to being relevant. I'll explain why later. The reality is there's two primary things that you have to consider, and that is extraterrestrial life that's been existing, living in our solar system for a long time, and the second thing is extraterrestrial life that may be visiting us now. Now, the third thing you have to ask is extraterrestrial life as it exists wherever the home places are for these civilizations. Okay, now let's cover the solar system at large to begin with. The solar system at large, I'm going to give you a... Kevin, is it okay if I give you a two-minute brief outline of the history of the solar system?
Yeah, but we do need to get to the subject matter of Mars and the Moon because we are going to open the phone lines tonight.
Right. This will be 2 minutes. There was a planet that existed between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. We call that planet Maldek. It exploded for reasons that are currently unknown, although we have a hunch about it. I did a major presentation on that at the University of Colorado at Boulder at the Society for Scientific Exploration meetings last year. And it's also part of our DVD, which is the Farsight Experiments, which is available on our website, farsight.org, that you can see that. We have so much information, it's hard to actually put it all together, so we use that DVD to give people a good understanding of where we are. That planet that exploded about 3 million years ago. Now, we know that because the information that we have from our remote viewing study matches exactly the information that was collected, astronomical and planetary information that was collected by Thomas van Flandern, the late astronomer who was head of his Department of Celestial Mechanics at the Naval Observatory. And he presented a huge amount of physical data suggesting that there was a planet and it exploded 3 million years ago. One of the reasons, there's not just one, but there's many, but one of the reasons we know that it was 3 million years ago is that many of the comets that come back into our solar system are coming back in for the first time. That means they were ejected, and now they're coming back in, and they have orbits of 3 million years. So they were ejected 3 million years ago, and they were ejected from that body that exploded. There's a ton of reasons. There's a lot of stuff about that. I hope at one point you're able to invite me back to talk just about that exploding planet because it's so interesting. But anyway, that planet exploded, and my own personal view on that, it was actually an act of warfare. It was not a natural thing. And then what basically happened is Mars, that was inhabited at that time, basically was covered. It was actually close to that planet. And Mars, half of Mars, was covered like a buckshot with material from that planet. And that really ruined Mars in terms of a happy atmosphere and a happy place. One side of Mars is covered with craters. The other side of Mars has almost no craters on it. So it was clear that something hit it from one side. And that side that has craters is also much thicker, a number of kilometers thicker than the other side. So whatever it was very close and literally layered it. However, it wasn't enough, that thing that happened 3 million years ago, to kill off whatever life was there. Why do we know this? Because an atomic explosion happened on Mars 1 million years ago. Now, why do we know that an atomic explosion happened on Mars 1 million years ago? Well, there is some remote viewing data on that, but that's not the main reason I'm coming. There's another book by a very mainstream scientist, a fascinating book, by John Brandenburg, and it's called Life and Death on Mars, The New Mars Synthesis. And this book, just came out last year, goes through all of the data that we have on Mars, including radioisotope data, that clearly indicate that a nuclear weapon was detonated on Mars 1 million years ago. when this, and we even know where it was detonated. It was detonated in a region of Mars called the Mare Acidelium region. And it was an above ground explosion. It was not a inner, underneath the ground explosion. There are situations that we have, even on Earth, especially in Africa, where we have nuclear reactions that occur produced from something called a yellow cake. It's a combination of biological water and other stuff that combines the nuclear stuff to a purity that you can actually have nuclear reactions where they actually get hot. However, all those things happen in the ground. This explosion that did occur on Mars cannot have occurred because of that. It had to have occurred artificially because it happened on the surface. There's actually a very shallow depression where it happened. There's scorch marks. It's very clear. And the radioisotope readings are very clear where it was concentrated. So that was the end of life on Mars. So we now know not only was there life on Mars, but we now know how it ended. There was two events. There was the explosion of the planet Maldek. And again, if you get the DVD, the Farsight Experiments, I do go into that extensively, and I do explain that. It's very crucial to actually see that. And then, after that, there was a nuclear explosion that happened on the surface of Mars, and that essentially blew the rest of the atmosphere away. And that only happened 1 million years ago. Okay, now, getting to our remote viewing data on Mars. It is, a very fascinating photograph and it had an anomaly on it, and it was a NASA JPL Malin Space Science Systems image from the Mars Observer.
Okay, we're about a minute away from break.
Okay, and on that photograph, there is a spray, literally a spray, coming out of a horizontally placed nozzle, looks like a metal nozzle, connected to a pipeline that goes into a dome. There's actually three domes right next to each other, and a much larger dome nearby. The domes are shiny, like they're made of a resin material. All dome-type mountains in the United States or on Earth are rough and sandy. They don't reflect, but these ones reflect. That spray is what caught our attention. It has a shadow underneath, and we know no geological processes that could cause that. So we conducted an investigation under squeaky clean scientific conditions using the best military-grade remote viewers on the planet, of the same quality or better than the military used for espionage purposes. And these remote viewers, under totally blind conditions, came back and verified everything that was on the photograph and told us everything else that was inside. Nigel.
All right, we have to step away from break. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this.
To the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on earth.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest is Dr. Courtney Brown. We're talking about tonight the results of remote viewing of the Moon and Mars. Before we get any deeper into the Mars information, I want to come back to that. I'd like for us to go visit the Moon first and talk a little bit about what you saw when you did remote viewing of the Moon, Dr. Brown. And the first thing that I want to give you the opportunity to answer, because I did get this in an email from one of your detractors, and that is that the claim was that what you're doing is not remote viewing, but what you're doing is channeling. So I want to give you the opportunity to answer that, and then we'll talk about the Moon. So are you channeling, or is it remote viewing?
Actually, I've never heard that before. It's so it's so ridiculous, I don't know what to say. Might as well say, am I jogging? Channeling is when, what remote viewing is, and again, I discussed the physics of it in our first presentation that we had, or our first discussion that we had. So people go back to that. I can't repeat everything. But remote viewing is essentially mind-to-place perception. So you're perceiving things with your own mind in the normal waking state of consciousness. Four reasons that you can hear if you go back and listen to that very kindly put up YouTube presentation that we did a week ago. So channeling is mind-to-mind communication. Now, if a mind can perceive something, that means that there must be some access that the mind has to that place. Well, similarly, imagine two people trying to connect together. That's a form of telepathy. Well, telepathy can be thought of as perceiving the thoughts of someone else. Channeling is bigger than that. Channeling is essentially where you allow the communication to occur in such a way that one person's consciousness essentially operates the physical body for a period of time of the channeler. Now, there are a great many tens of thousands of channelers. At the Farsight Institute, we don't do anything related to channeling. Period, nonstop, it's the end of the story.
Okay, so you're totally remote viewing.
Yeah, we do remote viewing, which is a military-developed procedure, and we use procedures that are the exact ones that are developed by the U.S. military and used for espionage purposes, or those procedures that are derivative of those methodologies. Channeling, however, does, you know, it can work. It can happen. But, you know, there are many remote viewers, people who say they're remote viewers, who are really crackpots that just don't do anything that's serious. There's, you know, thousands out there. And similarly, there's channelers that there's tens of thousands of them. How many are actually doing something that's useful where there's a real controlled communication between two people? There's relatively few, in my particular opinion. So while we do not do anything related to channeling whatsoever at all, there are some useful channelers and that I consider to be very high quality. The granddaddy of them all was, or grandmommy of them all, was Jane Roberts, who channeled an entity called Seth, S-E-T-H. More recently, there's Daryl Anka. He's the brother of Paul Anka, the singer. And Daryl Anka, he channels an entity called Bashar. And then there is Lisa Royal, L-Y-S-S-A-L, Lisa Royal. Actually, it's Royal Holt. Her husband's name is Holt. But Lisa Royal channels two entities primarily, two people. Essentially, one's called Jermaine and the other's called Sasha. Those three are extraordinary channelers, and they're really worth listening to. Now, there are other ones that are worth listening to, but those particular three are amazing. And there's
I don't want to get into the channeling too much. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to answer that.
But I did want to, since it was raised and people were saying I do it, I just want to really clearly say I don't do it. But when I say I don't do it, I don't want to dismiss it entirely because people dismiss remote viewing for the same reasons, and I don't want that to happen either. So anyway, there are some other really good channelers, but that's not what we do. We do mind-to-place perceptions.
Well, let's perceive the moon.
Okay.
You did, on your own, some remote viewing of the moon. And I would like for you to share with us any anomalous things that you saw, any strange things that you saw there.
Sure.
Including any extraterrestrials.
Yeah. Remind your viewers, your listeners, that in the early days when I was studying remote viewing, I also, unusually for a scientist, learned the remote viewing procedures. And because most scientists sort of study it independently of knowing anything about it, and that they get themselves into all types of trouble that way. But I decided to learn them myself. And in part of doing that, I did a lot of stuff dealing with extraterrestrial life in particular, because that interested me, under controlled conditions. And I discovered a lot of stuff about the moon, Mars, extraterrestrials in our solar system, and so on. What you will find out is that when we get back to the Mars project that was done by other people at our institute, that the data I found for the moon was actually very similar to the stuff we have seen on Mars with other viewers. So the initial extraterrestrial explorations that I did with remote viewing were done by myself. But the ones we do at the Farsight Institute, I normally don't do viewing at the Institute. I normally analyze data that other viewers who are highly trained collect. And basically what we found is that there is a hostile environment on both the moon and Mars. There's no air to breathe. Well, on Mars there's a little, but you can't breathe it. So in terms of environmental stuff, everything that's there is under the ground. So on both the moon and the Mars, you have situations where all extraterrestrial life is in facilities that are buried in the ground. So what do we see, or what did I see on the moon? And then I can talk about what the viewers, whose track records are well known, all the sessions are up on the website for the Farsight Institute. We don't ask anybody to believe anything. You can look at the data yourself, look at the conditions under which they were collected, look at the track records for the remote viewers. We give full documentation on everything, and then you can decide for yourself.
Okay,
going
so what
back
did we
to
see
my
on
early
the moon?
Publications of the moon, go ahead.
No, what I was saying, okay, so what did we see on the moon here?
There are bases that are underground on the moon. There are facilities that are both visible on the surface and bases that are underground. Some of the bases that are underground are absolutely huge. There is clear visible evidence on the surface of the moon, and in fact NASA has very good photographs of many of these facilities. Most of these facilities are on the other side of the moon, stuff that you can't see from the side that's facing us. Remember, the moon is tidally locked so that it has only one side that ever faces towards us. So if you were an extraterrestrial species going to go in and out, what would you do? You'd build it on the other side, because it's clearly shielded from human eyes, and so they can do things without disturbing us. But the bases are there. Now, what we have going on in the bases is a variety of different extraterrestrials working under different conditions, doing different things. What I found in some of my sessions, my own personal sessions, is that some of the facilities that are underground on the moon were involved in the genetic program that was very active and is now essentially completely closed. It's no longer active. That was being done by members of the Zeta Reticuli community. And that was a program that, I'm going into a lot of stuff that's in the book that I explain in the book Cosmic Voyage that I can't have time to explain now, that they applied for and they got approval for from a group that we call the Galactic Confederation, or the Galactic Federation. It's an organization of civilizations. They got permission from people who unfortunately don't remember this when they participate in it. So a lot of people in the so-called abduction phenomena were quite panicky when these things happened, but before they were born, they got permission to have this done. And this is what was found in the remote viewing studies. And the trouble was that the Zeta Reticuli civilization was dying. They had a civilization, and the remote viewing for that is also in my books. They had a civilization that was very much like us. We were very polarized. They were very polarized. They developed warring factions, and they essentially blew themselves up. They had a situation very similar to Mars, where they had a nuclear warfare type of a situation. So it was something that was so bad that the surface of their planet was no longer habitable, and they went underground. When they went underground, they started fiddling with their genetics, both to make themselves smaller in size, but they also were very traumatized by how they destroyed their own planet. And they wanted to fix it. so that they wouldn't cause that problem elsewhere. So they didn't leave their planet because they were so guilt-struck. And they didn't leave their planet because they thought they would cause the same problems elsewhere. So they started to genetically manipulate themselves. And what they did was they blamed their emotions, because that's where all the polarization came from, always looking at things as good, bad, enemy, friend. And they changed their brain structure so that they would only have one emotional response or one response to anything that happened to them. So they essentially no longer got angry anymore. But they also didn't feel love, and they were sort of Spock-like. And actually the best connection would be to think of them like the Borg in Star Trek without the hostile I'm going to assimilate you stuff. But in terms of a hive mind, they were highly telepathic and emotionless. That was very interesting. I have remote viewed personally, and I do describe it in the book, the Zeta Reticuli mentality. And to be honest, it is absolutely stunningly beautiful. You go into it, and you can actually perceive a clarity across the universe that is just breathtaking.
But is there a big base of them on the moon?
Oh, there are so many around the planet, you have no idea. If you want to get an idea of how many spaceships are around the planet, Kevin, do you remember when NASA up at the ISS, the International Space Station, was experimenting with a tether?
Yeah.
And the tether broke?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's lots of YouTube videos of that breaking. And what happens is, moments after the thing broke, there are literally hundreds of saucer-shaped spaceships with a notch in them and everything that just materialize out of the blue. So many. And in my first presentation that I gave you, that's up on YouTube, I do discuss the physics of how this type of thing is possible. It's related to the remote viewing phenomenon. It's all sort of connected. But they essentially keep themselves out of the visible frequency range. So,
all right, we have to step away for a break, Doctor. We'll come back and continue talking about the moon for just a little bit, and then we're going to Mars, and we'll dive into Mars rather heavily, rather deeply, I guess is a better way to say it. We're talking with Dr. Courtney Brown, and we shall be talking with Dr. Courtney Brown on the other side of this break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Just a quick side note, I did get an email, I think it was yesterday, from someone who is a new listener and said, I love the show, but I wish you would play music that was a little more soothing during the breaks. That's about as soothing as it's going to get, folks. It's not my job to help you go to sleep during this show. All right, we're talking with Dr. Courtney Brown. And we're talking about his remote viewing of what's on the moon. And Dr. Brown, you told us about that there are bases, and you were telling us about all of these UFOs or vehicles of extraterrestrials all around out there between the Earth and the moon and so forth. But let me ask you this. You said that there are a number of bases. Do you have any idea how many bases there are on the moon?
No, we don't. But we do know that there's an extraordinarily large contingent of extraterrestrials near Earth. If I might just finish with one sentence, the discussion we were having about the tether that broke with the ISS, the lesson that you should get from that, when the tether broke and all of those spaceships showed up all at once, should tell you that the extraterrestrials essentially not only are large in numbers, but they're bored out of their gourd, meaning they are sitting around and waiting. They are waiting on us. Mm-hmm. And there are so many of them that even an incident like breaking of a tether is big news to them, and they come out and show themselves. So on the moon, the remote viewing studies that have gone on involving the moon date back to essentially Ingo Swann, who was the developer of the CRV method of remote viewing that was used by the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency. And Lynn Buchanan is the primary instructor of that. He's retired military intelligence from the DIA. And Ingo Swann, in a book that's now out of print, but you can still get it over on the internet if you search for it, called Penetration, he described a situation where he was brought in by intelligence people under cloak and dagger conditions that are extraordinary. And he was asked to remote view stuff that ended up being on the moon. And he found large facilities up there as well. So that's where it actually started.
Well, he actually saw some human-looking.
Yes, a lot of them actually look human. Even the Zeta Reticuli are bipeds. I mean, they have two legs, two arms, and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the genetic engineering program that they were involved in, that was one of the things I heavily witnessed with the remote viewing that I did on the moon back in the 1990s. It's in my books, Cosmic Voyage and Cosmic Explorers, which again are available as free PDF downloads now since they're out of print. And what I did was I went into the facilities that were on the moon, on the other side of the moon, and went in and saw people looking like us working together with people that look like the Zeta Reticuli, which are smaller. They have those large wraparound eyes, big heads, things like that. Those are the ones who genetically manipulated themselves and are now trying to get out of that situation. They have a different type of body. They don't want to incarnate as us humans, because we have the same problems that they have. We are polarized. We fight. We think of good and evil. So they're they're a lot afraid of us, and they want to develop they have developed a genetically mixed breed between them and us that doesn't have the extreme polarized emotions that we do. But nonetheless, it has the emotional stuff that they erased out of themselves that they got back from us. So we actually did them a great favor. We're their parents in a very real sense. That species is called the Esasani. And so I actually remote viewed under totally blind conditions a couple of those bases, and actually saw the genetic engineering stuff going on, where the fetuses were in tubes, large tubes, and they were growing. Because the Zeta Reticuli are too small to have natural birth. The Esasani, which is the new species, it's half Zeta and half us, they do give live birth. The program was an entirely great success. And again, we are their parents in a very real sense. And so I did do that. And the Mars base is very similar in the sense that it's a huge facility, technologically extremely advanced, and there are people in it. The big difference between the Mars base and the bases on the moon appear to be that the extraterrestrials seem to have built the bases on the moon, whereas who's ever in the Mars base didn't build that facility. They're in it, but they didn't build it. They don't really even fully appreciate the fact that it's not theirs. They sort of think of it as, well, it's theirs now, and they're working in it. And I'll explain more about that later, and I'm sure you'll be asking me more about that Mars base. But the extraterrestrial facilities that are on the moon are actually using the technology that the extraterrestrials brought with them, the genetic programs, everything else. I should say also that I don't do anything related to remote viewing at my university. I'm the only academic that studies remote viewing anywhere, as it's done using the military or military-derived procedures. But I don't do that at the university. At the university, I'm an applied mathematician that works in a social science program. But why is that sort of interesting for here, for this program? is because a great many of the extraterrestrials that exist, that are floating around us, are social scientists, believe it or not. They have to work with us, and working with humans is extremely delicate. We are in a phase right now where they are trying to help us open up to the larger galactic life. We can't go out into the universe and just bump into them. So that's their job. This is that contact period where we open up. And they have got to get through huge layers of emotional junk that we have. I mean, if they're not here to conquer us, if they wanted to conquer us like we show in the movies, that would have happened long ago. They have technology that could have just shut off all of our electronics in a second. They're not here to do that. What they're trying to do is ease us out of our own shell. And the extraterrestrials really have their hands full when it comes to us. And a great many of them are social scientists, literally like myself. And so when I, as a social scientist, come out to your show, Kevin, and talk about the extraterrestrials and about remote viewing more generally, as I was doing in some of the previous shows, I'm actually helping the extraterrestrials a great deal, not just explaining their side of it from a human perspective, but also explaining how they value the role of consciousness in the contact scenario. It's not just a matter of landing a ship on the White House lawn. They could have done that a long time ago. The issue is they have lots of experience with these first contact moments. They have thousands of years of experience. And they know if they were to do something like that, it would create such a pandemonium, such a mess. It would take decades and decades and decades to clean up. It's like throwing a monkey wrench into a finely working engine. It's just not the way to do it. So they can't force us. They have to encourage us to come out. That's why you see ships flying around all over the place. That's why you see, for example, the Phoenix Lights, where even the governor of Arizona and tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people in Phoenix, Arizona, looked up in the sky and saw, ships, extraterrestrial ships. And some of them were the size of many city blocks passing right overhead, blocking out the stars, and even the governor saw one of those, looked up and saw it. And now, of course, the Air Force, wanting to contain things, sent out somebody, a pilot, 6 months after that and said, those were flares. Well, flares drop. They don't stay up there for an hour. And flares are not dark objects that block out all the stars and are physically clearly visible right over your head and flying right on top of you.
So the Phoenix Lights, so-called, were not just over Phoenix. They started in Nevada. And they flew across Nevada, then they came to Arizona, and they flew all the way from the north end of Arizona, all the way to the south end, and across into Mexico. So people from Nevada, Arizona, and Mexico saw these, and it was over many hours.
What we have now is a situation that's actually approaching the level of the absurd in terms of the excuses that the authorities come up with in order to try to explain it away. But we also have a situation in which the media, mainstream media, and much of the public doesn't really mind these excuses, even when they're not believed. And because the mindset isn't really quite ready yet, although we're being pushed as fast as we possibly can. But if you think of us now as compared to where we were back in the 1970s, we've come a long way. And we're much better and more open. Most people do believe that extraterrestrials are here and that these phenomena are very real. And so there have even been some very mainstream books that have come out recently by science writers, where they clearly say that at least 10% of all observations, cannot be explained by any means whatsoever.
So we have to step away for a break. Folks, we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith. What better way to spend a Tuesday. It's the best way I know, and I appreciate you being here. Now, for those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, you've missed tons. Of course, if you are a member of our members community, you'll be able to watch this show for the next 24 hours after we finish. It's live right now, but we'll upload the captured file, and you'll be able to watch it for the next 24 hours. And then you'll also be able to go to our archives from now on and listen to the show. So if you miss that first hour, you can cure the problem by clicking join. All right, we're talking with Dr. Courtney Brown, and we've been talking about the moon and his remote viewing thereof. I want us to have time to explore Mars a little further than we did before. He talked about this on, if you go back to this past Friday and then go back another week to that Friday, he talked about the Farsight Institute viewers viewing an operational base on Mars. But we just didn't have time to open up the phone lines. We are going to open the phone lines in just a few minutes, but I do want us to get back to Mars a little bit, and let me ask a few questions about it. Now, Dr. Brown, you told us that the Farsight Institute viewers took a look at Mars and took a look specifically at this base that's on Mars, and you described that base somewhat, and as you have a little bit here tonight. You told us that this base is of very, very ancient origin. The people who are inhabiting it now are not the people who built it. They kind of see it as theirs now. I guess that's sort of like in South America, where I forget if it was the Incas or the Aztecs, but the explorers, the conquistadors, asked them, "Did you build these great buildings?" And they said, "No, they were already here. They were built by the ancients, and we moved in." So it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
But now here's a question I have for you. Before we get into the details, let's talk about the location for a moment. Okay. Is this base anywhere near the location of that atomic blast, that nuclear blast that you told us about that took place on Mars?
Oh, that's a good question. Look, I have tons of stuff I can tell you, but people sometimes think I know everything. Sometimes you ask questions that I simply don't know the answer to. That is answerable. Mm-hmm. In fact, your viewers can answer that one, but I don't know it off the top of my head. And the reason it's answerable is the actual image, the satellite image of the Martian facility, including the spray, the nozzle, the pipeline, the domes, everything, is very high resolution, very clear. And it's available on NASA's website. And you can go to our website, farsight.org, and click on Mysteries Project, and then there you'll see the Mysteries Project on Artificiality on Mars. And there you will be able to see a link to the original. And with that, you have the target coordinates. You have the actual longitude, latitude, or whatever they use on Mars, coordinates of exactly where this spot is, and then you can go to Google Mars and find out exactly where it is. And then if you do buy John Brandenburg's book on Mars, you'll get a clear idea of where the Mare, M-A-R-E, Acidelium region is. It's in the northern parts of Mars, and you can clearly find it and locate it yourself. But, Kevin, you've asked me a question that's unusually. I normally have an answer for almost everything someone can ask, but that one you got me on. So I know how to get the answer, but right this very second I can't give it to you.
Okay. So how large is this base?
It is huge. And I have to, at this point, say that the two major instructors of remote viewing that are out there right now are Glenn Wheaton, who came out of Special Forces Intelligence, and Lynn Buchanan, who came out of DIA, Military Intelligence. They're both out of Army, but different wings. And both of them told me point blank, Courtney, the word extraterrestrial does not show up in these sessions. And in fact, you can look at the sessions yourself, Kevin, and all of your viewers can at farsight.org. They are there, free. Just you can look at them yourself. And the word extraterrestrial doesn't show there. So Lynn and Glenn have said, Courtney, they could be anybody, including Americans that were got there on some type of black project, and they're just not telling people about it, either from anything from launches that go on all the time at Cape Canaveral that are not told to the public press, or it could be even a reverse-engineered ET craft out of Area 51. I mean, there are so many possible different explanations. So I have to say that I've told you that as Glenn and Lynn, who I work with, they're also members of the board of Farsight, would say, now I can say my own personal opinion, okay? My own personal opinion is that they are extraterrestrial. And the reason I think that is because there are some people in them, in that don't seem like, the descriptions are not very much like Army-type people that we would send, some very spiritually oriented people. And I have a lot of detailed information that I'm going to tell you if you want me to tell you that. But the basic thing you want to see is that the people that are on Mars now are not, I mentioned earlier, that the extraterrestrials that are around Earth in literally thousands and thousands of ships on the other side of the moon, they are basically people that are scientists that work on physical things, but a lot of social scientists. And the social scientists actually have a very interesting life because there's lots of data for them to study of us. A lot of the other extraterrestrials, I think, are really bored out of their gourd watching us, and they're waiting for something and so on. That's not the situation in Mars. The people in the facility in Mars are not bored out of their gourd, and they're not a bunch of social scientists.
What are they?
So, they're scientists, mostly. There is a military and civilian mix. Some of them are in lab coats. Some of them seem to have military uniforms on it. So it seems to be sort of a combo mix. They may be actually in an area of Mars that's in dispute, meaning there may be more than one extraterrestrial group that sort of says, hey, you know, that's our place. So, but nonetheless, they are clearly of a mixture. Let me describe a little bit. Let me just pick one of the viewers, and a viewer that calls herself Houston, code name, but she had some really great sessions. Let me just describe some of the things that she found. Would that be okay, Kevin?
Yeah.
That will really sort of put some meat on the bones of this thing. Well, she found the location. All of the viewers, under totally blind conditions, they weren't told anything about the targets or even what the subject matter was, anything, when they were doing the sessions. They described perfectly everything that was in the very high-resolution NASA photograph. They identified the spray, told the ingredients of the spray. They found what it is, it's hot when it's ejected. It's acrid in its smell. It produces a loud sound, and it's emitted from an artificial source.
What are the ingredients?
Actually, the actual ingredients were produced by another viewer, and I would have to pause and find that other person's...
We'll get to that.
So can we come back to that? Mm-hmm. But she found out that it was an acrid smell, very hot. It's like waste material. It was under very high pressure, and it feeds back with a pipeline back to underground structures. There's a very sophisticated energy-producing technology that's computer-controlled and emits high heat. Most of the subjects working in the structures are men. They appear to be human in form, meaning if you were to see them, you'd think they were humans. Surrounding the structure, the surrounding structure is much larger than the subjects, meaning the facility is huge. Some of them have lab coats that appear to be white. Others have uniforms that have either a matching color or it may be blue. Again, some of them seem to be scientific in orientation, and some of them have sort of a military feel to it. They have a stint at the location, and it's somewhat of a hardship post, and it's clear that it's a working environment. It's not a vacation. They don't come there to have a good time. They are also engaged in some type of spiritual practice or meditation involving psi or psychic stuff, and there's also a public relations aspect to their work, although this is not primary. I must make a comment here. I am absolutely convinced they were tickled to death when they saw our project on them. It must have been very funny for them to see us watching them. And I bet they said stuff like, damn, those humans are pretty good. They got a lot. they got a lot of stuff about us. Okay, now let's actually go in to the facility, into the domes. And this is that same viewer. And of course, I could go into other viewers. They had equally great sessions. So inside the domes, there's an extremely high energy heat source. There are many uniformed subjects inside the structure. The structure itself has tremendous age, and that water used to exist in the location. And in the location, the water is now deep below the ground. But mind you, they had no idea this was Mars. We know that all this stuff is true because of what we know now about Mars from NASA studies. But these viewers had a totally blind conditions. They could have thought I was sending them to the Eiffel Tower. They had no idea. Mm-hmm. But they found water deep inside, and in the old, long ago, they've said it was fast flowing and on the surface, something that we know very well did happen. All right, now this is something you got to sort of make sure you're sitting down for. I've left the good stuff to the end. I've been covering just preliminary stuff. The viewer correctly described the peaked or dome shapes of the target's structures, mm-hmm. including very detailed sketches of the pyramid-shaped structures and their orientation, their location. It's, you know, when you look at it, you say, whoa, you mean humans can do this? That's your reaction. It's huge. When you look at the picture, their sketches, and the actual photograph, you say, whoa, this is amazing. All right, then the viewer goes 100 feet above the target and noted that, hey, it's hard to breathe up here. There's hardly anything up here. Very thin air, and I'm only 100 feet up. Very cold. Mind you, the viewer had no idea where this was. Then the viewer decided to look at a surrounding panoramic view of the terrain and noticed all the sand dunes and rocks. Okay, now the viewer said that the target is actually structured more like a complex compound rather than a single structure. It's all connected. The compound is very old, and it was extremely expensive to construct. It's very hard to see it because it matches the surrounding area. I mean, this is what the viewer was saying. Now, we can tell that from the photograph, but the viewer was doing this with the remote viewing, which is amazing. The target structures are architecturally important, and, Kevin, they're greatly decayed. The viewer correctly noted that Google Earth could find it. Because Google Earth has a Mars thing. Anyway, the viewer still did not come to the conclusion that it was Mars that she was looking at, but she just had the sense that Google Earth could find this thing. Some of the activity that takes place at the target compound is similar in nature to an extraction or mining operation, and this was reinforced by the sounds and vibrations at the target location. There are subjects in the structures, of course, and it's a working environment. The job setting is a bit of a hardship, and the subjects don't really enjoy it. They're far from home. They are scientific and economic aspects to their work. They're focused on their work. They want to return home as soon as their work is completed. However, the subjects may be trapped at the location by their own agreement due to the fact that it is apparently difficult for them to return home for some reason. Mind you, the viewer did this all blind. That's what military-grade remote viewing can do. Well, anyway, apparently some of the subjects are not convinced that all their work will make a difference to some larger goal, meaning they're there for a reason. There's something really important going on in our solar system. I mean, really important. And it may actually be related to whatever the post-2012 stuff is that we talked about in our last program. Well, the machinery, the viewer goes on, in the target structure is very old and very significantly damaged. And the subjects lack some of the many parts to make full repairs. There's an industrial feel to the machinery. Much of the target structure is underground, hidden, and in danger of being destroyed through age and, Kevin, get this, some carelessness. Meaning, the people that are there aren't foolproof. They can screw things up. And the viewer also noted that many people would like to know more about this compound, meaning the viewer actually detected that there were other people that wanted to know about this compound. And it is a sacred place for some people. The original purpose of the target compound was as a living quarters. And the viewer noted that much of the target is cut over stone, and it is well engineered. Can you imagine this being done all totally blind without knowing anything? It's great. I mean, it so matches up with what we know from the pictures. Now, apparently, no one currently at the target location fully appreciates that the structures, the target structures, are someone else's property. It's sort of funny if you think about it, Kevin. But anyway, part of the target location is used to fuel and supply ships or transporters of some type. There is no water at this location. Ships or transporters presumably mean flying craft. And the spray that is the focus of one of the targets may be part of a drainage ditch concept. The viewer makes the important note that the subjects at the target location are not aware that someone is watching them and their activities, meaning the viewer actually notes that the people at that target are not aware that we are looking at them when we were doing remote viewing. Now, since the subject, the thing has already been published now, I'm sure they know all about it. But at the time we were reviewing them, they were not aware. And anyway, so that gives you an idea of how much a single remote viewer can get when they're military grade. This is the very reason why the military is so concerned, not just about, oh, actually the U.S. government is so concerned, not just about keeping information about sensitive subjects like extraterrestrials away from the public, but also keeping information about remote viewing away from the public. Because, Kevin, we humans live our lives based on secrecy. When you look at the Federal Reserve Board, they have their meetings in secret. And the notes, very cryptic notes, are published, you know, 6 weeks afterwards. And when we have insensitive congressional hearings, they're done behind closed doors. We spend more of effort keeping things secret than we could possibly imagine. And so secrecy is a way of life for us. On the other hand, for extraterrestrials that have a different way of looking at things, it's the opposite. They have access to anything, anywhere. And secrecy is a byproduct of a desire to control. And the extraterrestrials view that as a behavior that is self-defeating. But they cannot force us to change. They can only give us some information and let us do the change by ourselves. That's why
that fits very well with what I say all the time, and our regular listeners will be able to quote this with me immediately when I begin to say it. They'll quote it with me because they know it, and that is, knowledge is not power. Secrets are power.
Yes.
Knowledge is freedom.
Yes, that's exactly right. And so what we are doing, when I mean by that, you and I, right now, we are actually changing the nature of human consciousness by talking about these things openly without any fear. So what happens is when people hear these discussions, and then when they get more information by going to the websites, getting information, free information, or if they really want to hit the ground running, as I've said many times, the best thing to do to know what we're doing at the Farsight Institute is simply to get the DVD that was designed for that purpose, which is to introduce you to what we do and all the amazing projects we do, called the Farsight Experiments. It's right there on the homepage. That's what it was designed to do, and you get the Mars Project, plus you get the 2012 stuff, plus you get the exploding planet stuff, and you even get the Multiple Universes Project, all put together in a way that just blows your socks off. And you also, in an hour and a half, say, okay, now I know what they're doing. And then you're not
able to get it
on their website.
All right, let's invite the audience to join us. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or a comment, Believe me, I could go. I've got another 2 hours of questions that I've written on my little yellow legal pad here, and I could keep doing this. But I promised you, I didn't open the phone lines when we talked about this before. I promised you that I would open the phone lines, and you could ask your questions or make your comments. So the telephone number is 623-444. 5889-623-444-5889. If you are not in the USA and you're not in Canada, we know it can be expensive to make an international long-distance call, although that number will work from anywhere in the world. But if you're not in the USA and not in Canada, you can go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture is a link that says Flash Message. That's just for you. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. Dr. Brown, I was wondering, can you tell me whether we have means to get to the moon or Mars?
Well, you mean, I wonder, Terry, it's a good question. There are two answers to that. Yes, we have old-style ways of doing it with rockets, but those are extremely expensive, and I don't know if we're doing that. They, as far as I'm aware, we have essentially closed down as of this year, actually last year, we closed down our manned spaceflight program entirely. The ISS is being, the International Space Station is being almost entirely kept going by Russian rockets and transporters. So there was a small private craft that docked with it a couple of weeks ago, but that's really insignificant relative to what the Russians are sending up. And so basically we're out of the manned space flight program. So there's apparently some reason for that. We're walking away from our investment completely. And we covered a little bit of some of the reasons that may be in the last program that we did with the show, which you can see in the archives for the show, for the members, for the Kevin Smith Show. And I should say that if we could go to the Mars and Moon, what would most likely be would be if we took the craft that have either been reverse engineered, extraterrestrial spacecraft that have crashed, either reverse engineered or built entirely out of whole cloth. Now, the U.S. does not want to let people know that we have any of this technology. And they want to delay that as long as possible, including still sending up satellites and other things with regular rockets. And the reason is very clear. As soon as they let it out that we have this stuff, then the whole ball of wax of the extraterrestrial phenomenon opens up. Everyone then becomes aware overtly that they've been lied to. Governments are afraid of losing control of the agenda. So it's worth any expense whatsoever using conventional technology to postpone that day where the people find out that we actually have ET ships and things, methods of transportation that are reverse engineered. But how far that is actually gone, they do not tell me. And I want to say one more thing, Terry. We specifically do not target, some of the major people on our board of directors are ex-military people, and they're very loyal, and we specifically do not target secret U.S. facilities. We know that the military doesn't want us to do that, and we don't do that. There's so much other stuff we can do that we don't worry about that. So,
we have to step away for break. Jerry, do you want to hang on for the break?
Yeah,
all right. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. Courtney Brown. We're talking about remote viewing, specifically the moon and Mars. On the telephone with us is Terry from Ohio, and Terry had asked if we had any way to get to the moon or Mars now, and Dr. Brown has said basically no, except if we have some back-engineered extraterrestrial craft or reverse-engineered. Terry, did you have another question or comment?
Yeah, I suppose it's relative, if, you know, because of the last question, but does he know whether there is human beings on the moon or Mars?
Well, I can say that. Terry, it's an interesting question. Let me draw now. I'll read you something from a session on the Mars project that we've been talking about, done by Dick Allgaier, who actually is one of the world's best remote viewers. He also happens to be a celebrity newscaster in Honolulu, but works at KITV. However, for the target, this is what he says. He perceives that in this facility on Mars, he focuses in on a particular humanoid subject. By the way, he gives an extremely detailed description of the entire surface of the facility, so that really
we're
going
to have to keep
picture.
It pretty so concise, though, so we can take other calls.
Okay, he basically finds a humanoid, but he says that humanoid may not be entirely human. That's the only thing in the session that actually indicates that these may not be us. The humanoids appear to be highly advanced in some spiritual sense, and he describes a process by which a subject actually gains a new body, leaving a previous body, and the consciousness is something like a container. The viewer describes the process as somewhat like a human chrysalis, which would be parallel to how a butterfly emerges from the form of a caterpillar. And this suggests a level of technology that would allow humans to transfer their consciousness from one body to another, which may be necessary if a subject needed to survive in an environment that is much different from a previous environment. So, this is a long answer to your question, but the issue is that these people don't appear to be strictly like us.
Okay. Well, thanks, Scott. I'll let somebody else in.
Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889, if you have a question or comment for Dr. Brown, that would be the number to call. And if you're interested in Mars, you're interested in, is there a base, is there a facility on Mars? Well, this is the right time to get answers to your questions. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Dr. Brown, I have a question for you.
Sure.
The moon is supposedly not native to this system. Do you have, because there are ancient records of when the moon was not here. Where did it come from, or have you viewed that?
You know, that's a really interesting question. This is another one of those situations where I have to say there are lots of stuff I do know about. There are probably no other scientist that I know of that has revealed more than the stuff that I've been talking about coming out of the Farsight Institute over the last number of years. But there are still stuff that we don't know. We don't know who killed Jack Kennedy, and we don't know where the moon came from. However, I do know the theories that are associated with that you're referring to. The fact that we do have such a large moon is very nice, because what it does is it keeps our magnetic field operating, and that magnetic field, as it spins around the Earth and interacts with our iron core, that magnetic field acts as a protection for us from solar radiation. So that's why we're a much more hospitable place to live than Venus. And Venus, if it had a moon like we have, would be a much nicer place to visit. But I'm sorry, I don't have the answer to that question. It's a good question, though.
That's quite all right.
And it's also a question that we could answer, but it's just like everything, we just haven't done everything. what you get from us is more than you'll get from any place else, but there are so many things that we haven't touched, which makes it so exciting to be alive right now. So many things to do.
Okay, Brent, do you have another question or comment?
No, that was it.
All right, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. Mars, the moon, extraterrestrials, bases. Here's one from the United Kingdom from Nick. And Nick says he would like to ask Dr. Brown why he believes that the many hundreds of lights surrounding the tether are extraterrestrial craft. Why would alien beings who are possibly thousands of years more advanced than humans be so fascinated with a tether?
That's such a great question. That's what I was trying to put two and two together. Now, first of all, when the tether breaks, these things pop out of nowhere. And there's so many of them, and they're obviously not from the tether. They're much bigger. And they're moving, and they're moving in an organized manner. And even headquarters radioed back to the space station and said, what are those things flying around? I mean, exactly, you can hear them talking on the tape, on the recording. So the issue is that what this really shows more than anything else is exactly what the questioner asked. It gives you an indication that a great many of these ETs sitting around up there are bored out of their gourd. They're waiting for us. Apparently we are in a situation now where other extraterrestrials that just sort of wander in are really not allowed to mess with us right now. This is a very protected time period for us. And this has to be enforced in some way. So this is a very protected situation we are in. Nothing can affect us. Nothing can interfere with us. Any type of negative-oriented energy coming in, just not going to get to us. And okay. They can't just do that with words. They have to do that with their presence. And that tether breaking, and then the huge number of ships that obviously just sort of pop up, then it gives you an idea of, A, how many there are. There's so many. And B, that, you know, that they would be so interested in a tether must tell you that they really don't have anything going on right now. It must be like watching the grass grow. No, seriously, the more you remote view the extraterrestrials, the more you get into the subject, the more you realize they are just like us. And they have some different capabilities that we have in terms of telepathy and things like that, but essentially they have personalities like us, they get bored like us, they need entertainment like us, and they get bored out of their gourd. Now, the people who are probably the most entertained, the most active, are the social scientists in the group, because they have lots of data to study. They actually get to study us. And they're trying to make predictions and try to figure out what's a good time to nudge us a little bit, show a ship here and there, watch what happens to the governmental control structures, watch what happens to the people. One of the things that's very clear...
Okay, we do have a call on hold, so we'll have to hurry.
One of the things that's very clear, and I'll just say this really bluntly, is that they don't really value our leadership hierarchy the way we do, meaning they think of the smallest person walking around on the street as equally valuable to them and anyone else as the President of the United States. So we would always say, you know, the President is on the top, and what do we matter? We're nobody. That's exactly the opposite of their perspective. So while they're bored out of their gourd, they're also looking at us equally, as all of us, and trying to do whatever they can to deal with us, and we're a hard group to deal with.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Mike from Kentucky, Kevin.
Hello, Mike.
First of all, a comment before a question.
All right.
That tether thing is the ETs, the bored ETs' way of playing jump rope. So.
All right.
By the way, I do hope your listeners get a chance to go to YouTube and look up the ISS tether incident and watch it. It's fun to watch.
Seen it many times. Talking about remote viewing the moon, and you've apparently remote viewed it very, very well. And I know that when the astronauts were there, it showed just a sort of a yellowish color. And when we look up at night, we see a yellowish color. What color is the moon?
Well, actually, I suppose it looks pretty much the way we see it. I'll give you an interesting story that I think will enlighten the whole issue. A good friend of mine just died. He was one of my absolute best lifetime friends. And his name was John Russell. He was a physicist. He used to work at Georgia Institute of Technology in nuclear engineering. He was the inventor of the things called seeds, SEEDs. And the first palladium seeds, those are the little rice-shaped pellets that are used to treat prostate cancer and various other tumors. And he also founded the first two, the major firms that produce those things. Anyway, he has a son-in-law He just died recently. It was a tremendous loss to me. But he had a son-in-law who was out in Los Angeles, and his son-in-law called him up and said, John, will you go out in your backyard, please? Now, John was up in Canton in Georgia, not far from Atlanta, and his son-in-law was calling from the L.A. area. And he says, will you go up and look at your moon, and look at the moon? Now, and John went out to his, 3,000 miles apart, went out to his backyard. This just happened last year. And he looked up and he said, holy blankety blank. They were actually watching this large ship, this large dot, move across the surface of the moon. It had lights coming out of it and the whole thing. And mind you, it couldn't have been something that was right above John, because his son-in-law, 3,000 miles away, was also watching it. And they were watching it like triangulation, and they watched it for about 45 minutes. And then it just zoomed off. So when you're talking about what color it is on the moon, I don't know. I suppose it's brownish, but the point is that whatever color it is, there's a lot of stuff going on there. And we do have a very interesting sociological phenomenon occurring here on this planet, where the mainstream scientific community, which does have access to these, it's not just my friends who look up at the moon and see this. Believe me, they have these data. We have a situation where we live by the mantra of secrecy, and we really have to let that go. Now, mind you, I didn't say we have to destroy it. Violence, psychological violence, is not the way to end one way of thinking. What happens is that the people who do hold that information back, and the people who are just like us, who eventually figure out that information is being held from us, we have to let the whole thing go. So we don't really want to talk about what's being withheld from us. So your question sort of has that flavor of, what color really is it? Really, let's get to the information that's being held from us. The really interesting thing is, this whole paradigm of secrecy has to simply be let go. And that's what the ETs are really waiting for. Indications that we are mature enough that we are not frightened by them, and not frightened by new information. And when we are not frightened, then we will be interacting with the ETs themselves. I mean, there is nothing more that they would love than to interact with us one-on-one. But they have their limitations. They don't want to put us into a state of catatonic shock. We are the ones that are determining our own fate in that regard.
Well, I have a daughter that lives within 15 miles of Canton, Georgia, so I know right where that is. And Jose Escamilla has got a movie about the moon, and he comes flat out and says that the moon does have definite colors to it.
Well, he does more than come out and say it, and there's three movies. What he does is show you the photographs, the color photographs, of the moon that the USGS has. NASA doesn't have them. And these are the Clementine photographs. And it is basically brown, with some yellows and blues in there too. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this break. Don't go away. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach here this evening, and my guest this evening is Dr. Courtney Brown. Dr. Brown, we have a caller on hold, so let's go straight to the telephone. And caller, your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Leslie, and I'm calling from Oregon.
Hello, Leslie.
Hi. So I was wanting to make a quick statement and see what Dr. Brown thought of it. When he was talking about how some of the extraterrestrials, were bored out of their mind, and about how, if in order for the the secret to not be secret anymore. You know, they're waiting for us, you know, to be ready and not to be frightened. Mm-hmm. I couldn't help but think it reminded me of when I was the 40 weeks pregnant with my kid. You know, I was bored out of my mind, but I was really scared. And, you know, I can't help but think, you know, childbirth, it is, you know, it hurts. It's not pretty, but it is worth it. You know, I just can't think that we're like 41 weeks along, and it's time to have that baby. And once you see the baby, everything's going to be fine.
You know, that's a beautiful, that's one of the most beautiful analogies I've ever heard about the situation. That was so great. I'm so grateful that you called. You know, that's exactly what we're doing right now. We're having the birth of a civilization. And if you look at all of the, almost all of the science fiction that you see out, it's always about monsters and aliens and fighting. So it's always very different from the reality of the situation. So that tells you where the human mindset is in large part. Actually, that tells you where the authority structure human mindset is. Actual most common people are not really there. So we're actually much more advanced, much more evolved than you'd perceive it if you were just looking at Hollywood movies. But this fear paradigm is still projected an awful lot. Even Stephen Hawking's, you know, the Stephen Hawking's, the physicist, mathematician, he said just a year or so ago that finally, you know, do expect there to be extraterrestrials and be afraid. Be very, very afraid. I mean, he's even bought into that fear paradigm. So in the past, mainstream scientists of that stature, of that ilk, have always been scoffing at the idea. So the significant change in Stephen Hawking's was not to scoff at the idea, but to go to the next step, which is, okay, so they're there, but like, be afraid, be very, very afraid. So if you were an extraterrestrial, what would you do in a situation like that, where some of the planetary leaders on the scientific realm are saying, if you were an extraterrestrial, if they were saying, okay, they're there, be afraid of them. Be very, very afraid. They will hurt you. I mean, what are you going to do in a situation like that? You're now put yourself in the minds of the ETs. All you're going to do is put your hand against your chin and say, oh my goodness, now what do we do?
Well, yeah, and I would put my hand next to my chin and say, oh my goodness, and these are the smart ones. Okay. Leslie, thanks for the call. We do have to move along because of the time constraints. Very good thought. We have a flash message from Kate in Norway, and she says, why are they taking so much care of us? Do they own us?
Oh, actually, no. Now, for this one, you really do need to go back and listen to the first presentation that I gave with Kevin that's now available on YouTube. Remember, Kevin Smith allowed that to go up on YouTube, which is really so great. And you can even get a link to it on our website, farsight.org, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T.org, on our homepage down on the bottom. There it is. So, why are they trying to take care of us? Because if you understand the physics of reality, as I described in that first discussion that we had, we have something called a wave function, meaning it's not just subatomic particles that have a wave function. Bigger things have a wave function. In fact, the entire universe has a wave function. There's a planetary wave function. There's a Kevin Smith wave function. There's a Courtney Brown wave function. There's a computer monitor wave function. And there's a house wave function that contains all of that. And there's a wave function that gets bigger and bigger and bigger depending on how many things you're including in it. Well, these wave functions actually have component waves that extend throughout all of eternity. That means the actual component waves that make up me and you are the same component waves that make up the extraterrestrials. So from their perspective, we are part of them. That's very important to understand. That is why they are here. They are helping us, A, because it's fun. Look, it is fun. It's a big venture. I actually even know of, I just heard a report the other day of a ET contact group that came to meet with a select number of humans, not necessarily physical. They had a channel that was actually doing the communication, but the ET contact group actually came close in a ship. And on board the ship was a group of children, ET older children, that were training for contact, meaning to them it was a field, it was a field day. What do you call that when you're in school and you go on a field trip? To them it was a field trip. And for the ETs to come here and to interact with us is exciting. It's like they want to do it. It's a nice job. But on the other hand, on a deeper level, they see us as part of them. Now, I'm not going into this part of it today, but there's another aspect. The other aspect is there has been extraterrestrial involvement with humans going back a long, long time. And some of these ET groups, not all of them, some of them have a bit of a guilt trip going on because they interacted with us early on, or some members of their civilization interacted with us early on, and they got carried away with themselves and got into worship situations where they got humans to worship them and think of them as gods. And so they feel a little bit guilty that they sort of got human civilization off track a bit. So they're here sort of to make things okay again, sort of a little bit of that. So on one hand, they think of them as part of us. They think of them of us as part of them. On another hand, they do it because it's fun. It's a job. Just like if you were an ET on a civilization someplace, and you heard of a mission, a contact mission for a really wild planet called Earth, where there was tons of stuff going on there, would you want to sign up? I mean, it's a great job. And so they do that for that reason. And the other reason is that sometimes they're making amends for mistakes that some members of them, of their own groups, did early on. And this is their way to sort of patch things up a bit.
Dr. Brown, we're just about out of time. I, again, want to thank you for being willing to come and sort of focus on this part of what we talked about in that first show that we did, and answer questions for people. And folks, thank you for participating tonight and for calling in. And for those of you who sent flash messages from the UK, from Norway, thank you very, very much. It all goes together to make the whole picture. And, you know, this show isn't this show without you participating. And I appreciate you doing that. Dr. Brown, again, thank you, and I hope you will come back and be with us again.
Actually, Kevin, early on in our first presentation, you mentioned that we had basically stayed out of the media limelight for about 14 years while we were doing research, and we're just now coming out and presenting it. So we have stuff that we haven't even begun to talk about. So if you do invite me back, I'd be more than happy to come back.
Outstanding. Just stay on the line with me for a moment, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this evening. That's going to be a wrap for this evening. But, you know, one of the great things about this is, you know, that the Kevin Smith Show is always going to be presenting information that's out beyond the front bumper. And so we will be having Dr. Courtney Brown back with us. I realize, of course, some people put more emphasis on channeling, some people on remote viewing, some people discount both of them. I understand that. We present every view. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.